2019, the world of new music with Richard Kingsmill.
I'm gonna put you in place like a fixture on an emotional blackmail bookshelf. I'll be your darling tits, legs, honey, sweet pea. But I'm a fucking asshole if you ask me. I need to be alone. You've been at my throat.
This song right here, this is the first song that we heard from the West Australian talent, Stella Donnelly. The song is called Mechanical Bull, and it appeared on her Unearthed page just under 2 years ago. Later that year, later in 2017, she put out another very powerful song called Boys Will Be Boys. And that, combined with her confident presence on live stages, we actually gave Stella Donnelly the Unearthed J Award that year. She got an international record deal soon after. She's toured overseas. And now we have her debut album. It's called Beware of the Dogs. Stella and I spoke about her album, some of the key songs off it, but let's start with her background and where she comes from.
Well, I was born in Western Australia, but I grew up in Wales in the UK, and then I moved back over. Now I'm moved to Fremantle as an older person, as an adult. Okay. And I've been living there for about 4 or 5 years.
So what age did you leave Wales?
I left Wales when I was about 10 years old, I think.
Okay.
Moved back to Australia. So my mum's Welsh, so we spoke Welsh, went to Welsh-speaking school and everything. It was a big experience.
Isn't that the most difficult language on earth, Welsh?
Yes, I talked to my dad about it. My dad's an Aussie and he went to lessons and tried to get it happening, but I think he just ended up at the pub.
Can you say anything in Welsh for us?
Yeah. I speak a little bit of Welsh, I just said.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty convincing to me.
Thank you.
So you're actually, for the first 10 years of your life, did you actually come back to Australia at all?
Yeah, so we went over there when we moved to Wales when I was about 5 years old.
Oh, okay.
So, and I've got such strong ties with the Welsh country and with my Australian family as well. So it's really nice whenever I get to go back and visit my mum Gi, which is my grandmother. And it's I'm very lucky.
So let's talk about coming through on the music scene out of WA. Mm. When did you sort of develop this voice? When did you kind of feel like, wow, I could maybe be a singer?
I think I was about 16. I wrote my first song then, and I actually found out that I completely ripped off a Billy Bragg song almost to the note.
Which one?
I think it was Must I Paint You a Picture.
You know my love for you is strong, girls. You know my love for you is real.
Yeah, just completely ripped it off unknowingly. I hadn't listened to that record since I was a really young child, so it came back from a very subconscious place. And that was a very, very basic song in terms of lyrics. And then eventually I started busking, and then I got into the West Australian Performing Arts Academy, which I dropped out of about 8 months later. But then I continued to play in other bands I figured that I enjoyed music probably when I was about 16, 17.
Yeah, Billy Bragg's a great artist to listen to at a young age.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where did you get influenced by that sort of stuff?
My dad always had Billy Bragg on. You know, he also had a massive poster in our games room of the Workers' Playtime album cover. And so I guess it was always someone that I turned to because I saw this big poster and I'd find the record in Dad's collection and I'd put it on. And yeah, his lyrics, I guess he was a fantastic artist to listen to as a young child because the focus is on the lyrics, the focus is on the story.
I was 21 years when I wrote this song. I'm 22 now, but I won't be for long. People ask me, when will you grow up to be a man? But all the girls I loved at school already pushing prams.
After that, I gravitated towards those stories through more contemporary artists as well.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, whose steps do you feel like you're kind of following in terms of musical heroes? Mm-hmm. Because your conversational tone of your lyrics, the observations you make, the comedic side of it as well as the serious side of it. So do you think you've taken the biggest cues from maybe someone like Billy Bragg in all of that? Because he does all of that sort of stuff too.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, a lot of it, I think it's a big mix, you know. I think a lot of it, there are also, I mean, for me, there are some female artists out there that I have definitely kind of resonated with in terms of how they, you know, speak, not just perform and write. And Ceris Matthews, she's the lead singer of a Welsh band called Catatonia, and she's on radio actually for the BBC, and she's someone that I still look to today for musical influence, and for the way that she talks about issues. And yeah, she always used to find a really sweet way of getting some pretty harsh points across, which I admired, yeah.
You couldn't have taken it easy on yourself. You should be making it easy on yourself. 'Cause you and I know it's all over the front page. You give me road rage, racing to the best days. It's up to you.
Well, it's sometimes more effective to do that than hit someone over the head.
Totally.
Because then they stop listening.
Totally. They're too busy being hit on the head to listen to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And once again, she's a fantastic personality, which you have as well. I mean, I wanted to find out about you as a person, because when you listen to this record and when you see you perform on stage and the banter that exists between you and the crowd, I wouldn't describe you as shy.
No.
Have you ever been a shy person?
I don't think anyone does. Just ask my family. No, I'm the opposite of shy, which I constantly cop it for. But yeah, no, I'm definitely not a shy person.
And stepping out from, because you've been in a couple of bands on the West Australian music scene, you've been in Boat Show and also Bell's Rapids, but to step away from being in a band where you've kind of got people around you and it's not just you as the focus, was that an easy path for you to take and a natural one?
It did feel very natural at the time. It was more, I think now I've become a little bit more self-conscious and a little bit more aware of that, you know, that kind of spotlight. And it's an interesting kind of feeling having more of a spotlight. I think having a spotlight in Fremantle is very different to having a spotlight on the whole Australian, or if not, you know, worldwide kind of thing. And it's a very different feeling. So, but it was a natural progression for me doing that. And I was so grateful to have those other bands to really kind of help me work on my guitar playing and my craft and how I want to go into being a solo artist, I guess. That was my training in a way. And it taught me a lot, even just in how to interact with other musicians and how to treat my band when they come on tour with me and all of those things. It just gave me a really amazing kind of training.
You had dinner at Jude's and you broke all the plates. Break all the plates. You threw all of your clothes off the back of the boat. You said that you're gonna quit, but we know that you won't. You won't. You won't. You only like me.
That track's got a really cute film clip as well to go with it that's been directed by Julia Jacklin. But that song itself, she actually wrote that. It was inspired by her time of playing the covers circuit around Perth and also in Fremantle, and she wrote that song as a result. It is called Tricks from the Stella Donnelly record, Beware of the Dogs, and I spoke to her this week about her musical background. So let's sort of hone in on when she was coming through the Fremantle music scene. I wanted to find out from her what she thought was one of her first breaks on the music scene.
there's this great guy who gave me my first kind of proper solo gig where I'd switched from acoustic to electric guitar and I'd written all these new songs. And this guy ran a toasted sandwich shop called Toast Face Griller, which is great. And he got me a gig in the basement of that shop. And that was kind of the first time I knew that I wanted to continue pursuing that solo feeling of telling stories on an electric guitar, whereas prior to that I'd kind of done acoustic stuff or a bit of folk here and there or played in other bands. So that's kind of behind the scenes moment for me.
And that was a really empowering moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was really nice. It was a room full, everyone was just sitting on the floor of this basement and they were engaged, and that's when I was like, okay, I should probably tell some jokes to kind of, you know, I'm here to kind of tuning up, so there's no one behind me to kind of like cover me, so I guess I better tell a joke now. And I guess that's when I started finding my overall, I don't want to say theme, but my voice.
Your voice, yeah. Toast Face Griller. I've just got to say that again, just because that's such a great name for a cafe.
It's great. It's still there.
In terms of working in cafes and bars, I know you've sort of been doing that as well as trying to pursue a music career, but that must give you wonderful ammunition as a songwriter.
Absolutely. Oh, the characters that I used to meet working in the bars, and one of the bars in particular is such an institution in Perth. It's called the Claremont Hotel, and, you know, that's where the Claremont serial killer back in the 80s was active, and it's just got so much history, and it's right on the train station, but it's in quite a rich suburb. But then you've got this interesting kind of contrast of people coming through. And I used to work the Monday afternoon shift where I'd be the only one there, and you'd meet all these sorts of beautiful people, but quite interesting characters as well. So, yeah, that gave me a lot of inspiration.
Does the idea go off immediately? As soon as you hear a conversation, meet someone, do you kind of feel like that's a song idea?
Absolutely. I'm quickly like typing into my phone, like, don't forget this, you know, and I use that to then kind of create a storyline or a narrative or, you know, something like that.
Is this a way for you to deal with humanity? Because, you know, you write about the pluses and minuses, but you do sort of focus on a lot of the minuses in society and human nature. Is this a way for you to kind of rationalize it and make sense of it and cope with it?
Yeah, it's definitely a processing mechanism, I think, that I have to kind of analyze and question and also question my role in it as well. And I think that's how it helps me kind of work out where I sit within all of these issues and where I can place myself. And it just helps me process them, I guess.
Do you feel good about humanity?
Yeah, I do. And it's funny. It's when I put out Boys Will Be Boys, which is obviously questioning humanity and questioning our humanity, it completely restored my faith in humanity, hearing from such beautiful people and fathers and sons and all sorts of people. It actually restored my faith. It was almost as if I'd put a call out and kind of heard back. And that was really special for me.
My friend told me of a secret.
Showed you the power of songwriting pretty much firsthand, didn't it?
Absolutely. Well, I never expected many people to hear that song. You know, I wrote it before the Me Too campaign, so these conversations weren't really happening. And then I put the video out 3 days before Harvey Weinstein was called out online. And yeah, it was a huge thing. I had to really step up, I guess, Richard, and talk about why I wrote that song. And yeah, it became quite a role I had to kind of step into.
Did it affect your perspective on songwriting at all after that?
A little bit. I mean, it did definitely. I realized the power of it pretty quickly, you know. And you know, when something leaves Fremantle, you realize that you know there is power in that. And I kind of it gave me a bit of confidence, really, to continue writing. And I didn't want to let it stop me from continuing to speak my mind and talk about these issues. I had to really make that decision, you know.
Yeah, well, because you would have felt, as I said before, firsthand, you would have felt, wow, people are actually listening to what I'm singing about and what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so,
I hope I'm saying the right thing.
Well, that's right. You know, every word you write, it's like, how's this one going to go down? Tell me this, did you write Old Man before or after that track?
After. So Old Man is almost like a reflection on the Me Too movement. And you know, I'd essentially watched my life kind of change. I'd watched the world change for me as a woman in music. And yeah, I guess it was just a way for me to continue to speak my mind. And I guess it's a middle finger as well to the people that gave me flack for putting out Boys Will Be Boys. And it was a way of me kind of going, I'm not going to stop and you're not going to scare me out of saying these things.
Trolling is, you know, an unpleasant part of the world that we live in. Mm. How do you cope with it?
Well, when it first happened, it was a real shock. It was almost like I was reading a movie script that was all directed at me, but these people didn't know who I was, and it was this really weird feeling. But since then, I've used it to kind of fuel what I do and how I speak out, because if anything, it speaks for itself in a way, the trolling. It almost answers what I'm trying to say, you know. And
Is it any different to the times that you were playing cover versions on the Perth and Fremantle music scene and you were doing those cover sets and people would be in the audience with those Southern Cross tattoos yelling out for you to play K-San? Is it really just the online version of what you've already experienced
pretty much? Yeah, it's you know, I've always kind of had to deal with that sort of thing. But now online, people are protected a lot more. I'm protected, but it also allows someone to say some much harsher things. You know, I've never been told things in real life that I've been told online. And that's the difference, I think, is, yeah, there's just a lot more. It's a lot more extreme.
Sliding edgeways out of strain, water protection.
Just a few more questions as well. Okay, so I found out that you don't have allergies, no, which was one of the observations that I wanted to make from listening to your lyrics.
Yeah.
Is your mum really a punk?
Well, she is in a more kind of, my mum's a nurse, so she's more of a punk in a wholesome way. You know, she was a punk because her family are actors, but she decided to become a nurse and leave Wales and meet this Aussie guy. And, you know, she's also always kind of taken my sister and I to marches and always thought about the bigger picture in terms of human rights. And my dad's a school teacher and my mum's a nurse. So they've always been part of a union of some sort. And they've always kind of thought about the bigger picture. And yeah, so in that way, she's an absolute punk.
And standing up for the things she believes in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. And also with your mum as well, do you actually really do need to apologise for some of the things you write about?
No, not at all.
No, she can accept it.
She loves it. Yeah, okay. She loves it. Right. No, she did send me a text saying that after Mosquito got played on Triple J, where I talk about using a vibrator, that she went to went to work with a moustache and glasses on as a disguise. But I know she's not really wearing a disguise.
No, she must be very proud. Yeah. Your family must be really thrilled with what you've achieved in this short space of time. And also, just listening to the record, they must be impressed with what you're doing.
Oh, they're so lovely and they're so caring. I'm so lucky to have them. And yeah, they're very proud and they're proud of all three of us kids for doing what we love. So yeah, I'm very lucky to have my parents.
Did you ever want to be a dancer? That was the other thing as well, because watching a couple of film clips that you've made, the last couple anyway, you know, you're not shy of a dance move. Did you have as a kid this secret passion in the back of your head?
I kind of accepted my fate of possibly being too uncoordinated and lanky to make it work. But in the last few years, it's been something that I've kind of felt a bit more comfortable doing. But no, back in the day, I avoided it.
And just quickly as well, the vibrato in your voice. Was that a natural part of your singing when you were kind of evolving as a singer? When your voice just warbles, it's such a distinct quality in your voice. Is that something that just naturally comes?
I don't think that came until I was a bit older. I think that that's something that kicked in maybe when I started becoming a little more husky possibly from over singing. Maybe it's a weakness in there. But I look back at old videos and I definitely didn't have any of that. Maybe it's just something I've slowly developed.
The great thing is that you don't use it in every song. If you used it in every song, it'd become irritating.
Yeah, but totally.
When it comes, it's like, wow, that's a really great quality.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, I want to play one more track. Let's play the title track, Beware of the Dogs. Mm. Is this essentially... politicians inspired this?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay, right.
So, without saying too much, yep.
So what was it? What was the catalyst? Did you see something on TV? Was it just one politician saying something that just went, I've got to write a song now?
Yeah, it just tipped me over the edge. I think it's the, you know, I mean, there's not all politicians are dogs and not all dogs are politicians, but it was definitely it just tipped me over the edge watching the kind of the privilege that comes from Parliament at times and that detachment from reality that I see. And it really tipped me over the edge in a way. I can't remember the exact thing. It was probably, look, I don't want to say any names, but you know, it just got overwhelming, some of the stuff that's been said by certain parliamentary members. And yeah, it ticked me over.
I kind of get the feeling with Australia as well. I mean, all of this stuff trickles down from the top and the behaviour that people show in politics, and other people have talked about this before, reverberates through society, which is, I think, a real shame at the moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I, you know, I say this coming from a very privileged position as a white Australian, you know, so in all of this, I acknowledge that. And I guess I'm just trying to use that platform to discuss these sorts of issues. But, you know, the fact that I can have a completely different experience in this country purely based on the colour of my skin, I think is pretty abhorrent.
This street is haunted like a beast that doesn't know its face. It's frightening to behold all the painted little nose smile.
The Sounds of 2019 with Richard Kingsmill.